Flatiron Health sponsors this episode. Their mission is to improve the lives of cancer patients by helping oncologists spend more time with patients and empowering scientists to conduct research faster. To achieve these goals, they're looking for bright, curious, and passionate people to join the team. With roles across engineering, sales, and data science, join Flatiron in building tech for good. The link is in the show notes.
Yo, everyone, welcome back to Parent Tech in the building. It's me, Michael Bain, and I am with
Abadesi of Hustle Crew.
The amazing Abadesi. What's up, man? Thanks. I really want to follow on from that Basecamp story. I know it's not really like, it's not really the most, I think on a surface level, it's not a serious story, but when you layer into it, it's very serious, actually.
It's and
I think
so it, serious. Super yeah, serious.
No, but when you on the surface level, Basecamp has 60 employees. But I think what happens here is going to kind of not set the trend, but it's going to be a trend for a lot of other companies.
And it's not just the size of their employees. It's like the size of the followers and the size of influence. How many people have read Rework? How many people are using Basecamp products, etc. But anyway, yes, let's go, Mike.
Yeah,
go.
So where we last left our heroes and villains, Jason Fried and DHH basically released a statement saying we're no longer going to have societal and political talks at the company. And then a whole bunch of stuff happened since we last recorded. Approximately one third of the employee base left the company. They were offered a pretty generous buyout. I think it was like 6 months salary, which don't get it twisted. Even if I was there and I was like, I'm happy with everything, I might take that. six months buyout is incredible.
Holiday.
I'd be like, yeah, holiday, guys. And everyone would be like, Mike, why are you leaving now? You know, I'm so offended. I gotta leave.
But ethics. Nah,
anyway,
ethics.
The ethics. It's all my ethical considerations. Now, but in all seriousness, I think people did take it to heart. And two of the people that I knew at Basecamp have both left. So I have no more connects at Basecamp whatsoever. So if you need any free Basecamp stuff, I can't help you. Waylin and Andy, who's the head of marketing. And it was all super senior people. It was head of marketing, head of customer support, the entire iOS team, the entire podcasting team from what I'm aware of. How could they have got it so wrong? That's what I want to know. Like, how could they have misread the situation so poorly about what their employee base wanted? I mean, you know what? So there is
many CEOs are doing this right now, dude. So like, that's what I want to ask the whole you. Workplace.
what I wanted to ask you, there is a theory that essentially they looked at their company and said, you know what? This isn't the company we want to have anymore in terms of our employees. So let's kind of funnel them out. So we're looking at this like, oh, what a blunder. But are they looking at this, ooh, clean sweep, let's go.
An ethic cleansing.
Yeah.
You like that? No?
Yeah. Okay. Not really. It's a bit dread. It's a bit too close. I don't like that. No.
Too far.
But yeah, so what do you think? Is there a chance this was tactical? Or is it a happy coincidence for them?
Okay, so I, in my role, have a lot of conversations with people who are probably like very well represented in leadership. But
got you, yeah.
Not necessarily well represented by the listeners of this show. I don't know. Anyway, so basically, cis, het, white man, 50-ish, maybe around there, maybe older. And I think what you have to remember is that is a lived experience that is so distinct from my own. I'm in my 30s. They're 20 years older. I'm a Black and Asian woman. They're white. My parents are immigrants. They're living in their home country, built their lives in their home country, generational wealth, rich, et cetera, et cetera. And I think even these two contrasting lived experiences have such different views of what the workplace should be, especially in terms of like how they see the value of diversity and inclusion, and also in terms of what they see that work as, if that makes sense, right? Because I think a lot of people that I often speak to who are, you know, really experienced senior executives, because of their lived experience and what they know and what they've seen, they see diversity and inclusion as, oh, there's a woman on the board now, or, oh, there's like a woman in sales. Oh, you're here, you're Black, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not actually going deeper into the nuances and like the levels of change that, let's say, I am thinking about. Because I'm actually like, yes, that's the, you know, those metrics are useful and those metrics are great. But what about like psychological safety and trust and sentiments of belonging? You know, it's harder to measure that stuff. We can measure it and there's amazing tools that help you measure it, but it's harder to measure it. And sometimes I've been in conversations where I've said, you know, to extremely talented, extremely accomplished leaders in tech, you know, people want you as a leader to do more of this or do more of that. And an example of that might be people want you to speak on the Black Lives Matter issues that are happening right now. Or, you know, your team would appreciate if you could create some space for working moms to talk about how the pandemic is affecting them. Yeah, like, let's just say these are some of the conversations I have. And, you know, this isn't Brandwatch. This is like all kinds of tech companies.
Right.
Sometimes the response that I get is like, I don't understand why I should do that. Is that appropriate? Can I talk about that? Do people want me to talk about that? It feels weird for them, right? Like, these aren't conversations that their bosses had with them when they were coming up, you know? And I think what we forget is that one interpretation of the way things are going is actually that people are, quotation marks, too sensitive or too, quotation marks, political, whatever the heck that means, too this, too that, too involved. And I totally agree with you that there are some people, look, they're a small company. They basically like, whatever, they always say they don't like the idea of lifestyle business. DHH came on a podcast and told me I don't like the idea of lifestyle business. But at the end of the day, they've built a company to suit their lifestyles.
Right, yeah.
And I think that, you know, like many people have said, and Casey Newton's been doing some amazing reporting, they built this company to suit themselves. It was becoming something that didn't suit them, i.e. they don't want to be a part of these conversations, they don't want to hear about these conversations. And so they took the step that they have the power and authority to do, which is, let me get rid of these people and weed these people out. And, you know, the reason I started where I started with this story is to say that, like, just because there's a critical mass of people that want these conversations to happen at work, and there's research showing that these conversations need to happen at work in order for us to be productive and et cetera, not everyone agrees with that. Not everyone agrees with that research, and not everybody wants that. There are a lot of people just clinging on to keeping all of these things out of their, like I said, out of their mind. They don't want it taking up real estate in their brain, in their companies, whatever. And so that's basically it.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think, what do you think about this story essentially being a telltale about what capitalism is, in a sense that historically, historically, it would be workers versus the boss, and it would be over things like pay, you know, salary, working conditions. What's it like on the factory? We're going to go on strike, blah, 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 blah. But now in 2021, especially with high-tech workers, salary is all good. Compensation is normally all good, right? But now it's like, whose voice matters? Whose voice is the voice of the companies? Is it the 59 people who work every day, or is it the two people who started it and own all the shares, right? They can, the buck stops with them, like you said, and they can say, listen, I don't like this conversation. You can all go bye-bye. Is that also a tension in this story, in the sense that the workers are like, well, hold on, we're equally as part of this company. Some of us have been here for 10 years, 15 years, I was seeing, which is like in tech years, that's like dog years. That's like 100 years, basically, to be at a company for 10, 15 years, basically, right? Whose voice matters? Is that part of the story? Is that part of the story
Absolutely.
Too?
100%. And I think I love that lens, whose voice matters, because both of us are community builders. And the word community is very contentious right now.
Right. And also, we're business owners. So we've got to put the contradiction there. So we're community owners.
And what's super interesting about this is like, okay, yeah, is it the company? Is it the company bosses, the company leadership that have the power? Is it the customers that pay the company leadership to exist in a way, if you think about it? And or is it this like other weird amorphous kind of thing called community, which is kind of everyone but no one and all that kind of stuff? And I think what we're finding out is that, one, it really depends. It depends on the company. It depends on how transparent they are. It depends on the structure that they have chosen and like what reach they have. And secondly, it's also a question of like, how do you define power? Because there's a hard power, right? Mm-hmm. Which is basically like, I fire you now because I legally can. But then there's the soft power, right? Which is like all of the backlash that's happening on social media. And it's a scary time to be a business owner. I'm not going to lie. It's a great time to be a community builder. It's a great time to be a community builder. Never been easier to connect people, solve problems together, share knowledge, etc. But the accountability, from my perspective, what I love about the Basecamp fallout is that it's showing that we can create accountability even where the legal system has left a gap for it. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts. What do you think?
Yeah, I think with Silicon Valley and tech in general, even though they're not really part of Silicon Valley Basecamp, we get told so much like, bring your full self to the company, your voice matters. But when push comes to shove, it's capitalism. It's a company, and your voice matters up to a point, and eventually gets to the point where the CEO and the owners are just like, you know, we're not fucking with this no more. Bye bye, basically. And I think it just reveals what we already knew, but it's just an interesting touch point. I think it's the same old kind of worker boss dynamic, but it's just in a different form with like, you know, high paid workers who can, you know, write apps as opposed to like work on a factory assembly line. But it's interesting. We'll see what happens. So quick proviso before we leave the story. Not everyone who left the company left for the reasons that we're espousing. So some people left. One individual, Ryan Singer, and I don't want to get this guy doxed or anything like that, so that's not why I bring him up, but he's in the articles about it. He was debating back and forth on the Basecamp, within Basecamp, that, you know, I don't agree that white supremacy exists within this company. And then he was then suspended by Jason Fried, and then he's also taken the buyout. So it's just a whole messy situation. And I think Jason Fried and DHH thought, you know what, we don't even need these conversations. Let's basically Let's end it, basically. So like, instead of like, okay, how do we have these
productively? No more mentions of identity. No more basically, mentions right, of anything.
Let's just all pretend that we're one homogenous blob, basically. Yeah, it's mad.
lines and dots, binary code. Yeah, I actually interviewed Ryan Singer for Product Hunt Radio. Awkward.
You should have asked him.
Dude, what are your thoughts on... But what is so frustrating about society right now is that we have people who are actually experts in social justice, experts in equity, diversity, inclusion, experts in organizational culture, experts in behavioral economics. There's people who have literally dedicated decades of their academic careers and blah, 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 blah to defining terms like white supremacy as a system of oppression and what that means. Right. You know what I mean? And then there's people like Ryan Singer who are probably just visualizing someone in a KKK mask going, ain't nobody ever show up in a white hoodie around here. So yeah. I guess we're good. And I just think we really need to have a conversation as a society about how we talk about things we don't know about. Like, we need to just precursor them with, my interpretation of white supremacy is people riding on horses, burning crosses, and lynching black men. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that here, but if my interpretation of white supremacy is wrong, please correct me. And then someone could have been like, well, actually, my friend, it's all about, you know, history and the fact that white is right and everything that is not is bad, e.g. blah, 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 blah. But instead, people are just like, I know what that means. Let me make a judgment about it. If you're one of those people, stop doing that.
But I think entrepreneurship has a massive disdain for kind of academia in general. Like, I don't think it's kind of like two different worlds and never shall they meet, basically. Like, a lot of... You obviously always hear Silicon Valley, the universities don't get college degrees, it's a waste of time. Academics don't know what they're talking about. The entrepreneurs are going to change the world. So it wouldn't surprise me that the first thought is not like, oh, who's done the research on this and who's actually, you know, especially liberal arts and kind of like social sciences, they look down upon. It doesn't surprise me that people don't take it seriously.
But I had my economics degree. Conscious uncoupling.
Yeah, okay, cool. So... All I'm telling all my single friends to move to Seattle. And this is completely separate to what I'm going to say next. So Bill and Melinda Gates are now officially separating after 27 years of marriage. And
clap that though, because 27 years, that shouldn't be frowned upon. That's a legacy.
So are you of the mindset that essentially nothing lasts forever, really and truly? So you had a good run. That's a success basically in your mind.
So I once listened to Alain de Botton on Elizabeth Day's podcast, How to Fail.
Yeah.
And he said, why do we look at the end of a relationship as a failure?
Yeah.
Instead, we need to look at what that relationship was and what it gave to both of those people and actually acknowledge that there was value gained from that and then applaud the courage that it takes to walk away when you realize it's not working for you anymore, when it's not doing the thing that it needs to do. Why is divorce a taboo? Like, that's ridiculous. Like, yeah, when people announce this and everyone's like, oh my God, I was like, stop falling for the Disney narratives that you've been sold since you were a kid. Like, they're two grown-ass adults. They're going to be fine. It doesn't mean they're going to hate each other and not be friends anymore. Like, they're going to be fine. It's okay.
Yeah, they'll be good. They'll be good. I wonder how they're going to run the foundation, though. So the foundation has $50 billion in assets, and both of them collectively have $130 billion worth of assets. And apparently there was no prenup. So I'm going to look forward to that tea, see what happens after this. Going to be fascinating to watch. But you know, it's really interesting because I feel like sometimes the other prominent divorce was the Bezos divorce. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, and I don't know. It's
Jeff and Bill, Bachelor Night. What kind of house do they go to get the ladies?
But you know what? So when Mackenzie Bezos, she actually took the half of the wealth that she got in the divorce, and she's been giving loads of it out quite silently to BLM and all kinds of movements and all kinds of social justice stuff. So sometimes when there's a divorce, sometimes the assets are freed up to do other stuff than what
Melinda wanted to do. Big things.
Yeah. So Melinda, if you want to invest in Tekish, we're here. We'll listen to you.
We got some missions. Things is happening.
Bill and Melinda, if you need some matchmaking tips, I can set you up with some people. No worries.
imagine post-pandemic, you're having a dinner party, your friend's just like, yeah, is it okay if I bring the guy I'm
my
seeing?
Single friend,
is that okay? And he just shows up, Billy G in the house. I'll be sick. Shows up in a Windows t-shirt or clippy. be like, hey guys. But yeah, no, I think this story has just really made me think that we need to grow up. We just need to all grow up as a society. Yeah. It's not a bad thing when two
adults
choose to bring their partnership to an end. Like if someone walked away from a business, people would be like, oh my God, this is so sad. I mean, I guess they do to some degree, but you know, I actually think it's harder to end things than mm-hmm. stay in something suboptimal.
Absolutely. But I think you're dealing with like thousands of years of just like programming that divorce is a bad thing. I mean, in the country that we're in, literally like a divorce led to like, you know, the Catholic Church being basically, you know, no longer being the state religion and all kinds of madness, right? So
nice one, Henry VIII.
Yeah, nice one, Henry. So yeah, it's I think there's a lot of programming that people have that divorce is a failure, that you've messed up, that you're both bad people or whatever, right? Or that it's, you know, it's a failed project. And I saw a lot of tweets saying, listen, man, after 27 years, you think I'm going back onto these streets, dating single again? Nah, B, you're going to stay with me to the day that I die, right? So there's that element of, yeah, there's the element of like, we've gone this far, we might as well just stick it out all the way to the end. But I agree with you. I think if it's not working, it's not working. But I put yourself through that and move on.
Yeah.
There's no shame in that.
For all we know, their marriage hasn't been, you know, what it was at the start for the last few years. They're old, their kids are grown up. Like, yeah, good on them.
Good for them. So yeah, a quick update on Dogecoin. So Dogecoin has continued to go gangbusters. My portfolio has continued to look good. I'm very happy. It's up 30% from Tuesday and it's up 11,000% for the year. And actually the new kind of bull run, people are saying that it's because Elon Musk is going to appear on SNL. And
why?
People are predicting that basically he might, because him and Dogecoin have a history, shall I say. He always tweets about it. It's like a fun thing for him. And every time he tweets about it, the price goes up through the roof, basically. Because Dogecoin is just a meme stock. It's all about memes drive the culture now. So what kind of world are we living in, though, where an asset that's worth $90 billion now, which has no inherent value, is now being driven up because one person may appear on TV and say something about, I don't know, it's absolutely just hilarious.
Could Elon Musk be Elon Musk if he was black?
No, definitely not. I mean, the fact is, if he was black as a South African, he wouldn't have got out of apartheid South Africa.
Too soon.
I know you're basically saying that, like, would somebody as trolly as Elon basically have the same level of success? The thing
Why is he on SNL?
So, you know what? Actually, apparently some of the staff, some of the comedians didn't want to perform alongside him. Me personally, I think that's a step too far. I don't see why you shouldn't. Because if Obama was going to appear on SNL.
He's so annoying.
He is annoying, don't get twisted. But I think the argument that people were making is that ethically they didn't want to, you know, work with him, like, oh, because he's so rich or whatever. Like, and to me, I'm like, if Obama was there, you'd be like, oh, I can't wait to work with Obama. But who's killed more people out of Obama and Elon Musk? So, and that's right. Keeping it real.
We don't know that's where that car is. We do not know where that car he shot into space is, my friend. That could have killed some people out in space.
There's about 20 people in there. Now, what'd you call it? So I didn't agree with the SNL cast kind of like thing. I mean, I don't know how true it is. It's just rumors. It could just be a fake story just driven up for clicks, which probably is. But I want to read a statement circling back to Doge. And this is from BlockTab Capital, General Parter. The real value is in today's meme-driven culture. And Doge represents the network value of memetics, which may prove to be enormous. Now, if I read that sentence to you 10 years ago, would you have any clue what I'm talking about? What the hell is going on?
I barely understand it now, and I host a tech show every week. So, first of all, like, fun fact, the first time I saw the word meme, I thought it was pronounced meme, because I don't know why. I mean, people are just inventing new ways to get rich, and it's annoying me, because we have more important problems to fix. I'm not hating. I'm just saying, like, we need to direct some of this attention and energy to solving actual friggin' problems. There are people who don't even, like, have the internet in parts of the US and the UK and other parts of the world. Go get them internet. Why is Elon on SNL when he hasn't finished launching his satellites that are supposed to get like the rest of the unconnected world online? Basically. He needs to get back to work. He's making all these promises, starting all these companies. He shouldn't be on SNL. He should be working on Neuralink. We need that.
Yeah, no, but on the question, if he was black, would he be able to get away with this kind of trolley behavior? Definitely not.
He probably would have been assassinated by the Illuminati by now if he was black.
Probably.
I'm kidding.
Anyways, one funny story about Doge though is that, so a friend of mine, he had been holding Doge for like 4 years, like 5 years basically, from the infancy,
the long hold.
But he sold
in the meme coin life.
He literally sold like just before this bull run, and he's calling me in tears like every week. I don't know what to say to the guy, because I'm just like, why did you sell? This whole thing is about hodling.
Exactly.
Rest in peace, his portfolio. That's what I'm gonna say.
This episode is sponsored by Movable Ink. Movable Ink activates any data into real time. Personalized content for over 700 of the world's most innovative brands. Movable Ink is one of the fastest growing SaaS companies in the US and is recognized by Inc. magazine's Best Workplaces in 2020 and 2019. They're hiring on pocketjobs.com and the link is in the show notes to apply.
So on a pop culture note, Black Panther 2 has been announced. The title is going to be called Wakanda Forever. And I think they're not recasting T'Challa, which was Chadwick Boseman's character. I think they're going to make it more of an ensemble piece and kind of follow other characters within the kind of Wakanda world, which is really cool. How do you feel though? Do you think they should have recast or do you think they should have just kept it moving the way they're doing it? Like, it's difficult in a situation like this. Because it'd be like after the first Superman, no more Superman, that's it. No more Spider-Man. The first actor, like, so does that mean the character of Black Panther as T'Challa will no longer carry forth henceforth? I don't know.
Do you know what? I think they could still bring back T'Challa or a version of it, like just like the way they kick off a new Spider-Man all the time or they kick off a new Batman. Yeah. But I just think it's too soon. It's just too soon. What it is. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we only just lost Chadwick, RIP, and like, we're not even out the pandemic. Like, I don't know. It would just feel too soon. I do think with the ensemble cast, there could be a lot of interesting directions to go down. But yeah, I mean, gosh, I still can't believe we lost Chadwick too soon.
I would have loved to see more. Yeah, I mean, I feel like if anybody's been cut short, it's been him. It's absolutely insane. I think he was just getting started. Even in terms of his career, like, he was just kind of, he had done a lot of like biopics and under the radar stuff, you know, but I think Black Panther was really his breakout. And it's actually on a financial level, like a lot of the Marvel actors, so Robert Downey Jr., they have their first contract and then it does well. If it does well, they get another contract and that's when they get the big money, like the $50 million, $40 million, $30 million per movie. And unfortunately, Chadwick didn't get there. He just had his first contract. Oh, and listen, money's not important in a situation like this, but it's just another example of just gone too soon.
What do you think about, you know, when Paul Walker tragically passed away in a car accident and they finished filming the rest of Fast and the Furious using
CGI,
his brother and CGI? Would you watch a film that had a CGI Chadwick as Black Panther?
I don't think they got
the tech right, high quality and the voice and everything. Use a bit of Lyrebird to get the voice right.
So let's say in a fantasy world where it could work perfectly, would I be engaged enough to watch it? Mm. I honestly don't know. I've seen movies where there have been actors who are dead. There was a Star Wars movie where
the actor, Carrie Fisher,
and then there was another one where there was a whole character for the whole film. Who had died like 20, 30 years ago, and they brought him back in with the permission of the family. So I don't know how I feel about it. I think it's going to be something we're going to have to think about going forward, because it's going to be, as the technology progresses, it's going to be a possibility that can be done quite easily.
I think it's one of those things that like feels weird, but if it happened, would very soon be normal. Like, I always think about Denis Villeneuve's Blade Runner 2049 with Ryan Gosling. And, you know, he goes at the end and there's like Elvis, like an Elvis projection.
Yep.
And a part of me is like, if you were born at a time where that had already been an established technology, by the time you can like make your own decisions about stuff, you wouldn't have known anything different. Like, we listen to old songs. We listen to songs of people who are dead. So if the technology existed for people to replicate other people in that form, it probably wouldn't be an issue. It's something to think about.
Yeah, something to think about. You're right. I think going forward in the future, the young people will just kind of adapt to it. They might be like,
I refuse to let anyone replicate me. For the record.
That's funny because, you know, Prince, he was like, never bring me back as any kind of hologram. Because
NFT.
Saw what but he saw what they did with Tupac, right? He saw they brought back Tupac as a hologram. And then like part of the reason why people were throwing shade at Justin Timberlake is because he did like a Super Bowl performance, I think it was. And he had Prince there like on a giant thing. And Prince was known for saying, yo, I think that shit's demonic. Like, don't do that. Like, that's my religious beliefs. So it gets tricky now. Who has the permission? Who owns the estate of a dead person to give permission about such things? Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When you pass away, you know, God forbid, it's not for a long, long time. Whoever's in charge of your estate might just be like, yo, man, let's milk this. Abadesi on everything. Abadesi movies, Abadesi.
And you might not, like Bob Marley's people do.
Like Bob Marley's people do, you know what I'm saying? But I think thankfully the family gets paid for that. But
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind as long as it's going to black women.
Yeah, okay.
Asian women, my peoples, but anyone else, nah.
So this story kind of reminds me of, do you remember Bodega? There was like a startup called Bodega.
Yeah,
it's
called Stockwell now.
They changed it, yeah. So this is a startup that is kind of similar, where there's an old custom that is in many African and Caribbean kind of cultures and societies. In being in the UK, a lot of Caribbean people used to call it partner. It's like a social credit system where you all kind of put money into a pot and then take money out of the pot at various times. And as a way of kind of saving and also getting a loan without having to pay interest, basically. And a lot of people, especially the West Indian community in the UK, when they first came here, they were blocked out of getting finances to buy houses. The banks weren't looking to set them up for businesses, nothing like that. They were completely blocked out. So they had to kind of create their own side financial system amongst themselves, right? Now, I have been introduced to like 3 or 4 people working on this as a startup. And each time it never went nowhere. I never even looked into it because I didn't know why nobody could push it any further. I think there's a lot of legal issues around building an app that has people's monies. What's the insurance on that? It's like there's a, you have to get real approval to kind of try this. Now there is a startup that is doing it and, you know, guess what? White founders who probably don't really have an understanding of why this was so important in certain communities and probably are now going to be able to get away with it and monetize it, primarily because they are probably able to kind of navigate the legal system and have the experience to kind of get the permission to launch an app like this. And it was trending on Twitter. People were like, this is like the most gentrified thing I've ever seen in my life, right? So what do you have any initial thoughts on this? Like, it's kind of what we've always seen.
It's just like, it's kind of like a actual real life meme now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, where people from dominant groups take something that literally has existed for so long in other places and then just do a bit of that Salt Bae magic on it. And then are like, ta-da, it's new and innovative. And everyone's like, oh my God, amazing.
Yeah.
That is just the meme. It's just like an actual joke in real life that's bound to repeat itself.
Yeah. I think it just also sums up like when you're a Black founder, more times than not, you don't have the connections and you don't have the know-how to kind of navigate, you know, the financial regulators in your given country to get permission to start an app like this, right? So even if you had the idea 3-4 years ago, which is what I did see, you ain't going to get nowhere with it, unfortunately. And it's a shame. I don't know if the startup will work. It might not work. And so it might be a story about nothing, but I think it is indicative of the kind of barriers that Black founders face, you know, because this is like an obvious startup idea. It's something that's existed in all of our communities for like hundreds, if not thousands of years. It, you know, it didn't take a rocket scientist to be like, okay, why don't we make this into an app? But there were other reasons why people couldn't make it work. Do you know what I'm saying? And now obviously these individuals who are starting this now, this gentrified startup, I'll call it, they are able to navigate and make it work and launch and raise funding. You know, they might get into an accelerator for what I know. So yeah, we'll see how it goes, man. It's a shame. It's a genuine shame.
It really is. All right, everybody, that brings us to the end of another Tuckish. Thank you so much for listening. Are you on an iPhone right now? Are you using Apple Podcasts? If so, I would like you to leave us a review.
Please, please, please.
And also, what did you think about today's conversations? Have you been following the Basecamp fallout? Are you sad that Black Panther isn't going to be what it used to be? Whatever you're thinking about today's show, hop on Instagram or Twitter at Tuckish Pod, because we love to hear from you.
You forgot to mention, do you want to date Bill or Melinda? Let us know. We can try and make it work for you. Guys, all right, I got connects. I can do the introduction. All right.
Oh, also, thanks, Aaron, for sending a really nice tweet about us. That was sweet.
Okay, shout out to Aaron. Cool. Peace. Bye.